made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And 9 is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So Tom, ready for you.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Oh, is Cindy in here?
Yeah.
By golly, she is. Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hoffman.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom.
I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And on July 5th this year, a month away, I'll celebrate 47 years of continuous sobriety. There have been some good times and there's been some bad times, but I've made it this far. The topic for me tonight is the 8th and 9th step. Eighth and ninth. And I did make some notes in my 12 and 12 just to make sure that I stayed on track. Step 8 talks about making a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them. When Kevin asked me about doing this, I was kind of befuddled. I didn't know what the hell to do. I have been incredibly sick for the past 2 years, so I've been really out of commission. And you really, when you do that, trust me, you get all screwed up with what did I do in that step and what didn't I do in that step. I certainly didn't drink, but I didn't anticipate all that confusion in my head, which I should have anticipated anyhow. But when I look at the 8th step, somehow the 4th step also jumps right in there. And there's a difference between the two. The 4th step is talking about our moral inventory and all that stuff. And the 8th step gets a little personal. I didn't really like the 4th step that much, only because I was very young in the program. And of course, by the time you hit the 8th step, you're pretty well along and you know what's going on. But I was a pretty good hard-headed Dutchman, and that 4th step kind of bewildered me, because it told me I've got to talk to somebody after this is all over with and tell them what I did. And fortunately for me, I had a sponsor who was diligent in keeping me aware, and very patient. I was on the phone daily to him because of the circumstances. I had the wife had finally had enough of counseling and all these other things, and you could see things were getting real scratchy. Now, we're married 60 years the next January, so don't let me forget to get that in there. But at that early time, we had some issues that, you just didn't jump out on. And I knew I had to do something, so I called and spoke to Bob and so on and so forth. And we had a daily, almost daily 5th step, as I recall. I was pretty determined to stay sober. I came in February and messed up on July 4th. But in the meantime, I was hearing some pretty good stuff from the old timers. And it was stuff that at times didn't make sense, but it was stuff that pushed me on to do an inventory and talk to Bob about it. Unbeknownst to me, I was dribbling through this inventory every day when I talked to him. I was just getting rid of some stuff. I had all this fixed in my head, and then it fell. Taking that fourth step and heading to the fifth, I was reluctant because it's an embarrassing movement. Because to talk to somebody after you've been sober just a few months about some nitty-gritty stuff was hard for me. The same thing happened with the eighth step. There you're told to be personal. Make a list. Tell me somebody that you did something wrong with. And I had a wife I could have done 10 pages on, for God's sake. But it was just one of those things that was real hard for me to do. A couple of weeks ago, I passed out a piece of paper on the fourth step, and that kind of gives you a guideline of what you're looking for in that eighth step. The fourth, to me, got rid of some of the little stuff, I guess you'd call it. I kicked the cat and all that stuff. But you jump down to the eighth step, and you get a little more serious. At least I had to. And I had to make that list over an extended period of time. First, I had to pick up the ones I didn't discuss in the fifth step from the fourth. And then I had to add what I knew was an issue for me. I did it backwards, starting from the day I sobered up and just kind of climbed backwards. And it's kind of a real horror story if you really think through it. Going back, it you see highs and lows and peaks and valleys. And maybe I should have known the night before I got married that this was going to happen. The boys took me out to get a drink at the Elks Club, Elks Creek, one of them two. And they got me hammered the day before I was getting married. A month before, I got a new set of teeth. Wedding morning, I couldn't find those goddamn teeth. That was terrible. My mother and dad were so disgusted, they went on to church and left me with my best man to find those damn teeth. I knew they had to be there, but gee. So that might have been an indicator of what I was to look forward to, or my poor wife. That's one of the things that comes out of me in the eighth step. And there's incidents all through my life that I had to catch up with going backwards and see them face up. Just the way they were. Thank goodness for my sponsor. And if you're, hey Jerry, how are you? Good to see you. Where was I? But my sponsor, and consequently Jerry's, for a while, kept me in line very well. He took what I had to say and mulled it over in his mind and either gave me advice or said, sit back and sit on it for a while. I had another friend in the program, a young lady, who came in just about a year after me. We had built a nice relationship. By then, my wife and I were separated. And nothing happened between me and that girl. I had too many other things on my mind. But anyhow, we had set up a system of talking things out. She was just sobering up, had men troubles. I was just sobering up, and I had just drinking troubles. I didn't have women troubles at all. But we would talk down there every day. And fortunately for me, I had her to fall back on. We'd sit and talk and talk and talk and finally reach no agreement or no decision, but all along I was emptying some of that eight-step stuff out and didn't even know it. We came to a point where if it got to be too much, we said, let's talk about it tomorrow. We'll put it on the shelf and hang on to it tomorrow. If it comes back, we'll use it. We'll do something with it. 9 times out of 10, the darn thing didn't come back at all, and it solved itself all by itself. I don't know if that was me or somebody else, it doesn't matter. We're okay.
Sort of.
Sorry. I'm trusting you.
Me too.
But as I read in this in the 12 and 12, my mind never was any good at remembering things, so I just wrote things down. And one of the notes I made that I highlighted, when they were talking about the eighth step, there were cases too where we had damaged others who were still happily unaware of being hurt. That was a big part of my eighth step, because I was, 34 when I sobered up? And you look back from that, and you got a lot of crap you got to look at real hard. And some of it didn't even need to be addressed, but it popped up. So I would try to deal with it in conversation with even Jerry and I. At that point in my sobriety, we built some nice friendships, and we could do that together with no real issues. One big issue I can think of is Jerry had a boat, a bunch of guys had boats, and we went out to the peninsula. Gene Agree fixed us up with some steaks, and everybody brought a dish, and we sat on Beach 11, and we just kind of had a nice meeting with, I don't know how many guys, 5, 8, 10, didn't matter. When it was all over with, I went over with Jack Sibe and spent the night on his boat, and we talked. And had a wonderful evening. But this was some of the stuff that I did when I first came in. I needed an outlet. And those people gave me that. Now, it doesn't seem like I'm being too formal about the eighth step here, but in my little silly mind, I was doing a lot of the eighth step unconsciously. I think, when I look back. And when I look now, my attitude toward my family, my children, my neighbor, it's all changed in a little way. It has changed so much from years ago. It's been the practicing of these principles and getting rid of all the crap in the eighth and fourth steps that helped push me along to handling myself with other people. There were some of the ways in which fear conspired with pride to hinder our making a list of all people we had harmed. I could put my father's name down, my mother's name down, my wife's. But when it comes to pulling that out and adding to it and saying, well, this is what I did wrong, this is where I have to correct it, got stumbled, because all of a sudden there was four or five different things I had to address with my wife, and 8 or 10 with my mother, and probably 30 or 40 with my father. But his insistence was that his son will never be an alcoholic, so I'll never call you an alcoholic. That was a year into my stuff. But he never did, and wouldn't admit it. He and Mom had some issues with drinking. But what would happen when I was writing these things out is Joe Blow would turn out to be quite a scenario of many different things that I had to look at and forgive either him, her, or me. And as I went along and looked at all these character defects, it was me that needed to be changed and not them. But how long that took me, I can't tell you. Because it's one of those things that comes along, as I told you in Fritz Ebenoff's story about the pickle and the cucumber. It just happens, it's there. And suddenly you've forgiven yourself, you look back and said, no, I think I'm okay. And then 10 years from now comes up again. But most all of it was disposed of in the fifth step. When I got to the ninth, I had a couple of different things going for me. First year I was in the program, my sponsor and I went to a retreat up in Derby, New York. Father Atkins was the retreat master, whatever. He was an alcoholic. There was about 40 of us. Very nice weekend we had. But Father, in one of his many talks, said, gentlemen, I don't know of anybody that has come to this fellowship without a shotgun at their neck. And it made a lot of sense. There's always either a liver or a wife or a kid or car accident or whatever that put us here. And when I thought about it, I couldn't think of anything else. I tried, but to no avail. But we did a lot of spiritual things and then a lot of alcoholic things. Like his tale about the guy who had control of everything and he didn't have to worry about nothing. He can control anything. And Father looked at him and said, well, here, take this dose of salt and drive to Cleveland without opening the door. Salt was a laxative. But that's kind of the way the weekend went. Just a great bit of spirituality plus Father's advice. This goes on, and it says, our business associates didn't suffer because we were usually on the job, and our reputation hadn't suffered because we were certain few knew of our drinking. And that was true. Although, at least in my mind, that was true. I didn't focus enough to see that 10 times I'd come in late to work and stuff like that. But all that started to become familiar to me. And became stuff that I had to work on in order to get my personality to where I would want it. Which was sometimes very hard to do. The thing goes on, in some cases we cannot make restitution at all, and in some cases action ought to be deferred. We should nevertheless make an accurate and really exhaustive survey of our past life. That's step 8 out of the 12 and 12. There were some things in that 8th step that I wouldn't tell you today. And yet it tells me to keep working at it, because it'll come out, it'll get there. And it's part of the reason I continue to attend AA meetings and try to cultivate an air of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really important to me to stay sober. When Kevin asked me, you think, hey, this jerk has 47 years of sobriety, and I should be espousing tons of wisdom and bullshit. It ain't there, folks. It just ain't there. But I've had a very, very rewarding 47 years after things settled down. I'm old enough to be a grandfather 8 times. Got 1 granddaughter, 7 grandsons, and now I have 3 great-grandsons. Notice there's only 1 girl in there. I don't know what the hell happened, but all I got is 1 little girl. She's a doll. But they're a big part of my life now, and I'm anxious to hear what their reaction is when they hear these tapes, because none of them have heard any of this. None. And when I look back, just the oldest 2 were familiar with what I did in the program, only because I hauled them around to different conferences up in Chautauqua and the like. But once I get through this whole thing, I'm hoping they're wise enough, maybe, to at least take what I've gone through and use it in some way for themselves. They have no issues now, none that I foresee, but they'll finally see a whole different side of their father. I don't know whether I want them to see it, but that's what's going to happen. Oh dear. Isn't this something? I went through this darn thing and had all these words. Let us think of some of the subtler ones, subtler misbehaviors, which can sometimes be quite as damaging. Suppose that in our family lives, we happen to be miserly, irresponsible, callous, and cold. Is that stuff that you brought up in the 8th step? I don't know if I did that. And is that stuff I can point to Joe Blow and say, well, you're irresponsible. That's stuff I got to point to me at. And that's where they seem to be coming at as I read this stuff. I'm really kind of ashamed that I don't have it at the tip of my tongue, because, again, it's that 47 years that says, I should have that. Well, I don't. I just don't. It goes on, we lavish attention upon one member of the family and neglect the others. I have done that. My granddaughter is a good example. But I don't know as I've consciously avoided the boys. It's just the opportunity for attention to my granddaughter was there more than it was to my boys. Other things around the home, to get into isolated incidents would be driving me nuts. This goes on. Where does it go on? What happens when we try to dominate the whole family, either by rule of iron or by constant outpouring of minute directions for just how their lives should be lived from hour to hour? I thought I would think I did that. If I look back a year at a time, 47 years, a hell of a time. Looking back, there is times I tried to control their lives. And to me, I don't know if that should have been handled in the 4th step or the 8th step. Sounds like they want you to handle that type of thing in the 8th step, that you can get down and dirty and apologize for it. Pay them back. You know, you forget that you borrowed $200 from Joe Blow 25 years ago, but suddenly it surfaces when you look. And right now, $200 wouldn't be much of a problem. But explaining it to Joe Blow would be another issue. As I see the eighth step, that's what they want you to do. They want you to dig around, find that person or thing or whatever it is in the eighth step that doesn't seem to fit your character or your personality, and do something about it. First of all, talk to your sponsor. I'm kind of an advocate of almost any two AAs talking together over a cup of coffee has a solution in it. So I'm very comfortable in whoever I'm talking to in the program. If someone has had some experiences that I may or may not have had, but it's conversation that builds my trust in them and other individuals. So it's important to me to do that. And to sit down and say, okay, Bob, we're going to do the ninth step, wasn't my way of doing things. Our way of doing things was to put me in the front seat of the car and drive to Wattsburg, wherever the hell we went, so he could talk to me. And I could talk to him. Afterwards, we stopped at a restaurant out there, had a cup of coffee and a piece of pie, and more conversation. And slowly but surely, these little irritants of my life were falling into place. I am eternally grateful to Bob for what he was, what he did. Now he was, I want to say old man, but I'm old man too. but he had a bunch of years of sobriety on him. And he was very matter of fact, but if you were a lady and you had your arm around you, you better watch your butt because it's going to get pinched. That's Bob. My boy Bob. But he helped me through this, get into some of all this. That just blows my mind why the hell I can't find what I wanted. In the book, when it starts off on for step nine, there's three pages. So I can talk, but I can't do much to that. Good chair. Judgment is a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence are what it takes to get through step nine. That's real obvious to us, I think. Good judgment, prudence. All along, from steps one through eight, we've picked up an education on all that type of stuff. And in the ninth step, it's time to apply it to your system. I think I have done that, but I've done it in a bunch of different ways. At least I'm comfortable with the way I've done it. And that's been most often with sincere conversations over a cup of coffee, or sitting down directly and saying, hey, I want to talk about this in the fifth step or the ninth step. But all this time, I'm very content in the way my sobriety has come, the way my family has melded itself back together, and certainly we have rough days like any other Tom, Dick, and Harry. But we are one, we are together, and I have three of the greatest boys in town, and my grandchildren. as I said earlier, I spent 2 years in a sick bed here. So I'm kind of out of commission, but not. We could talk about that crap for days, because it was, everything was a different situation, a different circumstance, but that doesn't need to be brought up. But as far as I'm concerned right now, I think I'd just be yammering on for no good reason. So I'm going to call this quits and save my sanity and my legs.
All right, thanks, Tom. So now we'll open things up for some questions. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, just go ahead and unmute yourself and state your question. If you're here in the room, raise your hand and we'll get you the microphone so that we can pick you up on the recording.
Thanks, Tom. Jerry Riblett, alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
You brought back some memories. You and I and Bob Nesbitt, and Jim Stevenson, Jack Side, Jim Oblinsky. Them thoughts are worth $1 million. And I was sitting here thinking, you know, all back when we were together. And I fired Bob Nesbitt after the first year and asked you to be my sponsor. Then later on through life, we sponsored each other.
Yeah.
And that worked out well. And I'm late, but I'm glad I came. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks so much, Jerry. There's a lot you have to say there. Because this October, he'll have 47 years. Now, I don't know if you can get a hold of him to leave, but I know he'll have 47 years in October. And we did have great times. He mentioned names that go way, way back. We did so much together. And some of it was relevant to the ninth and fifth step, and some of it wasn't. But we built a community of our own that couldn't be shattered. We trusted each other, we knew each other, so on and so forth. All those little things of the program that are important. Now, it takes you a couple of years to get that honesty stuff done. But once you get it, you've got it pretty good. I'd like to talk sometimes, I'll get back to you, on the four absolutes. They're a part of the program that really intrigues me. Honesty, purity, love, and unselfishness. That's a part of the program that goes way back, way before Bob's time. And it's developed, and what's interesting about it, in my travels, as I traveled with my former job, the further away from you got from Akron, these things changed a little bit. I never heard of the absolutes out in Philadelphia or Boston. But little things changed the further you got away from Akron. Yet, the basic fundamentals were there. No matter what meeting I was at, whether it was a speaker meeting or a closed meeting or whatever. But the absolutes were just kind of a neat part of the program for me. Anybody else? Now that I rambled on.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom. Eric, alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
You mentioned that you hadn't told your kids or your grandkids about, you know, any of your issues in the past or anything like that. One, did you have any thoughts of that when they were younger, about a certain time, to possibly share your experience with them to prevent them from making the same mistakes? And two, was there just like a reason why you decided not to, you know, fill them in on the struggles you had?
I had no reason, none whatsoever. A guy you heard here a while ago, his kids never knew he was even in the program until after he was here 20-some years. But I had no forethought of what that would cause or wouldn't cause. In retrospect, I kind of wish I'd have given them some kind of indication as to what's going on. Because those absolutes, my two older ones, Tom and Rick, joined Beth Dombrowski's daughter and another little girl, and they spoke on the Four Absolutes up in Chautauqua. And those are the only two of my children that have any inkling of what went on in my life. And there is no depth to what they know. They know I'm a drunk, and that's it. I have no point or no decision that I wanted to not tell them. I just didn't. And all of a sudden, the facts are here. I realized maybe I should have looked at that differently. But I did not.
Who else has a question for Tom?
Speak up, Bob.
Hey, Bob. Hi, I'm Bob, alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
Tom, thank you very much for your talk tonight. As for the Four Absolutes, I was in a rehab center not long ago and in Northeast Ohio. And they would have an outside group come in and do their meeting. And they would talk about the Four Absolutes all the time. And I went up to one of the older guys and I said, what's with these Four Absolutes? Because I had never heard of them. And he told me, he says, you know, they started when the whole AA thing started. And he said it's still very strong in Northeast Ohio. Yeah. But I don't know if it's that strong anywhere else.
I don't think it is. Been north and south and east and west.
Because I had never heard of it until I went to, never heard of them until I went to that rehab, you know? So, but they, in Northeast Ohio, this was south of Ashtabula. And, that was a big part of their regular AA meeting. Yeah. Was the Four Absolutes. And I talked to the guy and he says, you probably won't hear these anywhere else, but we still do them up here. So just wanted to add that. Thanks. Well,
thank you. As I said, the further away you get from Akron, why the littler you hear it then. Littler? You don't hear it much. They are absolutely impossible. And they're part of the beginnings of AA, as I understand it, that where they were sorting out what was relevant and what wasn't, and yet they still keep them there. So that's all I know about them now. And you had something?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Tom. I know we talk about it in this room sometimes, but what's your take on like a living amends? You know, how we can only apologize to someone or an individual so many times before it loses some value. What's your take on just living life as a better person and having that be kind of like your apology? That's my question. Thanks.
That's a good question. Why don't you ask Kevin? Maybe Kevin knows. No, that's a right way to look at it. I do expect that if I have an amends to make, that once I've made that amends, I'm done. That to me is for the purpose of the ninth step and the fifth step. Now, sometimes that doesn't happen, as I've read somewhere in here. And it's one of those things in the book here, they seem to tell you, just hold off on it until it does become relevant. It's my son. set it aside and it will surface again and you'll handle it then. And I do believe that, very much so. That might sound like you're avoiding it, but if it's one of those real touchy personal issues, no one has a right to know about it. And it's right now it's within you. And anything similar to that has got onto that other person's mind anyhow. Now that's maybe too medial or whatever. But when I've had a toughie like that, I've sat and most of all I've prayed over it. And eventually I get an answer. Now it's not maybe next week or not next year, but I do get an answer. And to me, that's the most important part of one of the very, very most important part of my program is my ability to pray and say, okay, God, you're going to be up tonight. I'm going to sleep. You just handle this. And he does. Much to my enjoyment. But good question. Holy moly.
Who else has a question? All right, Kevin's got a question.
Always. Thanks again, Tom, for coming out and making a special effort. I know that, you know, it's a big deal. You know, this is a big deal. There's a couple of people here who have already done this and respect that. But my question to you is, one is an observation about, you've talked repeatedly about how the guys in the program had a little fellowship, all these long-timers and short-timers, and how you guys used to just hang out and kind of work the steps informally, but work the steps together. What I would like to know is that when you got some direction from your sponsor about making an amends, it sounded like it was like a group discussion, and they said, you know, you better quit beating your wife, you know, or whatever that character defect or whatever that amends that had to be done, that, you know, relates to the other question about, you know, a living amends and changing your behavior to become the type of man that, you know, the program conditions us to be in. And using those, you know, the beginning of the four absolutes that the Oxford group used.
Actually, Bob had some real crude directions for me, as Jerry will tell you. But we suffered that out the first year, and then Jerry and I came along and we solved a lot of what we were confused about with Bob. Bob was very direct, and he was from out in the country, just a country boy, but had a lot to give us, and he did. He gave me a lot. But there was a big age difference at that point, and some 40 years difference. That was kind of hard to relate to him, to be honest. Something else we mentioned. When I come in now, you're talking 47 years ago. You know how many women we had? You know how many black people we had? It was one. And the women you could count on one hand. So all of that focus has changed over the years. Quite a bit. It's real hard for an old fart like me to keep it down and say, I don't want to hear about your drug problem. And I don't. This is an AA meeting. So, but there's been a lot of changes over the years. And that's kind of what's happened. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.